say, boys and girls, this is Bobby Bliss from Overkill. That's right. And guess what? We just got added to the Milwaukee Metal Fest. We'll be there Friday, May 17th. So stay the whole weekend. Let's get our heads ready to bang. We're heading to the epicenter, Milwaukee. Let's get it on. My name is Bobby Blitz, and I approve this fucking message.
Welcome to the show, everybody. What is going on? If you're watching on YouTube, like, subscribe, hit the bell if you would. Leave a comment if you enjoyed today's episode. This is number 695 with Becky Baldwin from Merciful Fate. It's a good chat with her. I hope you enjoy it. And I want to thank everyone who got their tickets to Milwaukee Metal Fest May 16th through the 19th. As some of you might have heard, unfortunately, Destruction had to postpone until 2025, but the good news is Doro is coming from Germany, the Metal Queen. So we got a Metal Queen on the episode today, and we got one coming from Germany for Milwaukee Metal Fest, May 16th through the 19th. And Milwaukee Metal Fest and today's show is brought to you by Century Media Records. Speaking of Metal Queens, we also have Lacuna Coil for their first Milwaukee Metal Fest appearance, and they will be on tour during that time, during April, May, in the U.S., so make sure you get your tickets. It's them. I think Oceans of Slumber, another band. It's going to be a great time. Make sure you come. Get your tickets at therave.com/Metal Fest and support all the Century Media artists that are playing. You can go to centurymedia.store to pick up like the new Upon Stone, which features, you know, I'm always talking about the future headliners of Metal Fest. You've got to hear this Upon Stone record. It's absolutely crushing. They are the future of melodic death metal, if you ask me. You can check out their debut, Dead Mother Moon, produced by our buddy Taylor Young of Twitching Tongues and God's Hate. That's another great one to pick up while you're over there at centurymedia.store. Also, while I have you, Milwaukee Metal Fest meet and greets are being added every day over at martyrstore.net. Plus, finally, you can pre-order my thrash metal album, A Love Letter to Thrash. It's called And Josta for All. And yes, it's a fun one. 10 originals. Got Chuck Billy from Testament on there. Got Zetro from Exodus. Got Scott Ian from Anthrax. And a bunch of other great guests. Go to martyrstore.net after the podcast today. And I will see you May 16th. I'll see you all weekend, but I'll be there May 16th for the pre-party, which will also feature Bobby Blitz from Overkill, Zetro from Exodus. And, you know, the Josta band. Charlie Belmore will be in the house. Shout out to Charlie. Hopefully Nick will be there, and shout out to all our patrons over at patreon.com/Josta. Go over there, sign up, and wish Nick a big congratulations on the new addition to his family, little baby Lucy. So congrats to Nick and Lauren and their lovely new daughter who just arrived, baby Lucy. Lucky Lucy, I'm going to call her, because that same day, Mind Med went on a run. For those of you who like The Rock and like the stock, MNND is the ticker. This is not financial advice, though. Okay, Buster. While I have you, one more shout out. Let's shout out Dunnable Guitars. Check out dunnableguitars.com. And don't forget that they are not only sponsoring today's episode of the Josta Show with Becky Baldwin from Merciful Fate, but they will also be an official sponsor of the Milwaukee Metal Fest. And we're gonna be playing some of their guitars up on stage at the pre-party. I'm gonna have one in the studio, and you can check it out right now at dunnableguitars.com. I will get you a code at some point if you want to drop some loot on an axe. I suggest that you do, though. And I will be recording my new Josta EP with a couple of these guitars, because they're just incredible. Dunnableguitars.com. Last but not least, indiemerchstore.com. Head on over to indiemerchstore.com after the podcast today and check out the ginormous selection of merch that they have. Everything from death metal to grindcore to metalcore to deathcore. I mean, it's just an endless supply. You can never have too many black shirts. That's what I say. You know what I mean? Just when I think I have too many, I go on indiemerchstore.com and I'm like, oh fuck, I gotta get this new Carnifex shirt. I got to get this new Ingested shirt. You'll see it. Check it out. And when you're over there, pre-order that new Ingested, because it's an absolute banger. It's coming out April 5th. It's called The Tide of Death and Fractured Dreams. And it's coming out on Metal Blade Records. But you can get it now at indiemerchstore.com and use the code JOSTA10 for 10% off. That's indiemerchstore.com, Josta10 for 10% off. All right, everybody, episode 695. Like, subscribe, hit the bell, leave a review if you like what you hear. Becky Baldwin from Merciful Fate is my guest. Now on to the show.
My friend, the lead singer of Hatebreed, the infamous and notorious Jamie Josta, is in the building. That's what's up.
Jamie Josta from the metal band Hatebreed. That guy's famous.
Coffee, death metal, and push-ups.
That's Jamie Josta. Remember Jamie Josta? You know him. He's a podcaster, but he's also a metal fan.
I would say you need that.
That shit is hard.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. We got Becky Baldwin from Merciful Fate here. First timer. Welcome. Good to have you.
Hello. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Where are you right now?
I am at home in Birmingham in England.
Very nice. So have you been to the bench?
I have actually only quite recently. I've lived in Birmingham for over 3 years now. And it was only last year that I was like, hang on, I haven't visited the bench yet. Like, let's just check it out for the first time. But yeah, I think they've actually taken it down temporarily to do some repairs on it. So at the moment, it's not up, I don't think.
All right, but were you the only one there when you went?
No. There's always a constant stream of people coming through.
Right on. Yeah, I'll have to go. Should I get to Birmingham in the next year or so? We'll see. You know, we get a lot of complaints from the UK fans when you announce on Download or Bloodstock, because a lot of times that'll be the only show the band will play for the year or whatever. And then it's because it's got to be exclusive, right?
Right.
But do you tell the fans like, hey, make sure you go see us at this show, or do you not engage? Do you say, well, maybe we'll announce a headline tour after the festival? I never know which way to play it.
Yeah. No, it's hard to, because, you know, you don't want to put any blame on any exclusivity deals, because, you know, they're there for a reason for both you as the band or at the festival as well. So yeah, I guess it's frustrating for fans, but also you don't really know what to do as a band member either.
Yeah. And then I'm always like, well, maybe the festival will sell out in advance and then we can add a headline date or a headline tour. But I have noticed a lot of bands are announcing UK headline tours, like with tertiary markets and deep, like places deep in areas where a lot of shows haven't been going. Are you seeing that, or is Birmingham still is there still a show almost every night of the week?
Birmingham's still got quite a few bands coming through. There's always, I think the local band scene is still very strong here. But I've noticed fewer European bands coming here, and generally a lot of bands announcing a European tour, and they leave off the UK completely, unless if, again, you know, for an exclusive festival appearance. And I'm guessing that's because of like the different rules with now touring Europe in the EU is going to be separate from the UK now we're out of the EU. But yeah, I guess for the bands that have come through, I have seen some, like, you know, you'd see it, you'd like read like, okay, London, Manchester, blah, blah, blah. And then there'd be some town that you're like, never even heard of that town ever. Like, I didn't even know they had like a venue there. So yeah, it's good for, because usually if it's not in one of the major cities, it's probably some kind of independent venue that just has the space to accommodate a band like that. So that's really cool. But yeah, no, it's interesting how it's like kind of changing slightly.
Because I have a band that I work with, Crowbar, and they were like, we want to do the full tour, right? We want to do Tunbridge Wells and Milton Keynes and Huddersfield. But what is the most off the beaten path spot that you've played that you had a great show at and you were surprised?
I can't remember what was it called. It was confusing me because I was sure that there were, oh, it was called Leek. It was a town called Leek, like some little small town, maybe even a village. And I thought it was a typo and it was Leeds. But so I put, oh, we're playing Leeds. And then it's like, oh, no, it's actually a town called Leek. And I'm like, oh, okay. I'd never heard of it in my life. So, but yeah, they just had like a kind of more of a youth like art center, I think it was that we played in. But yeah, never been there since, and you know, never heard of the town since. But you know, you get to explore lots of interesting places as a musician. So I guess that's you know, even as a small band, you can get to interesting places. Like there, maybe quiet small places, not as exciting as you know, the trips I've had with like Merciful Fate. But yeah, it's cool.
Well, when you were on tour with Merciful Fate, and I think it was Creator, we were playing in Gary, Indiana with Anthrax and BLS, and you guys were playing Chicago, and we were trying to figure out a way to get off stage, come to your show, and then get back by bus call. And I thought, you know, a lot of people would be like, oh my God, you know, this is so great. You're going to Gary, Indiana. Like, we rarely get shows. Meanwhile, people were like, no way, we don't want to go to Gary, Indiana. Why aren't you coming to Chicago? But it was like, we're not coming because obviously we don't want to play the same night as Merciful Fate and Creator.
So how far were those two towns from each other?
I think about an hour or so, but there's a lot of traffic out there, especially getting into Chicago, mm-hmm. you know, in the evening or whatever. So we didn't end up doing it. We were pissed because we really wanted to see that tour. But let's talk about Merciful Fate, and do you remember where you were when you got the gig or when you got the call? Can you tell us about the audition process, if there was one?
So the audition process, I guess, happened completely without my knowledge. they were booked to play Bloodstock Festival, Merciful Fate, and it was my first time going to see them. I'd kind of picked up a Bloodstock ticket that week, thinking I really don't want to miss seeing Merciful Fate this weekend, so I'll go down. And little did I know that the night before they played, they were just staying in Birmingham. And so the night before they played Bloodstock, they were talking about the tour that was coming up in like October 2022, because they needed a bass depth, because Joey was on tour with Armored Saint when that was scheduled for. And they were thinking about ideas of who to have, and they were going through lists and being like, I'm not sure if these people are the right thing for what we need. And you know, started to kind of expand their search beyond I guess their initial thought was suggestions from the management company and people that are already working in the industry, people they kind of already knew from the scene. And they were like, I don't know if this is like Merciful Fate really suited. And then they started suggesting some other band names, and they were saying, well, it doesn't have to be a man. We've only suggested men so far, but like, does anyone know it could be a woman? And that was when Hank said that he'd seen my videos, and he was like, oh, check out this bass player called Becky Baldwin. She does like, you know, a lot of covers on YouTube and Instagram and stuff. And she's the, you know, the kind of classic, like old school heavy metal that we do, and plays fingerstyle bass as well, like, you know, like Timmy Hansen did. So that might be the right kind of thing. And so, yeah, management and King Diamond kind of just, yeah, got together, like went through a bunch of my videos. I don't really know which ones they were watching. I was really interested to know. And then they were like, yeah, well, we'll ask her. And then someone said, I don't know how they found out that I was going to be at Bloodstock, but they found out that I was going to be at the festival. So they kind of sent a search party out to look for me during that weekend. And then brought me backstage before they went on stage and asked me there and then if I'd like to come and do the tour. And I was just like, this is insane. I just thought I was here to see the band for the first time. I've been a big fan of them since I was like a teenager and, you know, loved Timmy Hansen's bass lines. So, completely unexpected. I didn't put anything forward to be a part of it or be considered. I didn't even know they were looking for someone. And then, to be asked to to join them on a tour was just like mind blowing. And they were like, yeah, would you like to do it? And I was like, of course. Like, I don't know. I'm not even going to look at my schedule. I'm just going to say yes.
Wow. So are you normally like an impulsive decision maker, or was this the one where you were like, all right, I don't need to sleep on this. How many times will an opportunity like this one arise? I'll just go for it.
Yeah. It was, no, I'm not a very impulsive person, I don't think, but this was just something on just another level that I just couldn't imagine to be real. And I just thought, like, you know, again, these opportunities don't come up very often. Like if there was anything in my schedule that stopped me from doing it, I'd regret it for the rest of my life. So it was just like, I'll find a way to make this happen. I guess for a while, at least like a few weeks, I was kind of feeling like, is this real? Like, I don't really believe it to be true that it's actually going to happen. It wasn't until basically when I landed on the flight in Dallas, I was like, okay, yeah, no, this is actually going to happen. I'm actually going to play on stage with Merciful Fate. Through all the, like, you know, practicing, learning the songs, through that whole process, I couldn't really picture that it was real until it was.
And like, how many songs did you already know at that point? Or did you have to start? I mean, I'm sure you had done videos for your socials and stuff of you playing some of their stuff, but how many did you have to learn? And did you want to learn other ones as well? Like ones that weren't in their set, like the ones that you wanted to play?
Well, yeah, actually the only one that I really learned like in detail before was Into the Coven, and that one wasn't in the live set. So I was like, damn it, you know, just the one that I might have some, you know, basic idea of the song. But the whole set list, except for one song, most of it was from the first two albums, which I was very familiar with just listening to. Like, I know the songs well, but I'd never tried like learning them properly before. So yeah, it was kind of intense like learning schedule for those couple of months before we went on the tour. Mostly because the songs, the structures are so constantly changing. Like, they don't have a kind of standard verse, chorus, verse sort of song structures in most of the tracks. And one of the songs was Satan's Fall, which is about 13 minutes long. And again, it repeats like a bit at the start and a bit at the end. But everything else is just like, yeah, key change, like time signature change, everything's going to be a different feel. So when you're like cramming, I can't remember how many songs, 11 song set, I think it is. And all of the sections of these songs are quite removed from each other. They kind of, if you listen to them in isolation, you wouldn't think, yeah, that's the same song. It gets them all really messy in your head. So yeah, that was something that kind of made me a bit concerned about the set list, because it's just a lot to learn in a short amount of time. And without being able to have a rehearsal or I don't know, yeah, ease yourself into it. It was like, okay, you're going to use in-ears for the first time. You're going to be on like a massive stage for the first time in a proper professional production. I mean, I have been touring for years, but in small bands, you know, pubs and clubs, that kind of level. So this was a big change in what I was doing.
And what was the first show, and like, what was the capacity of the first show? Was it a big festival or a big headliner?
It was, we played Dallas. What was the venue called? I've forgotten what the venue's called, but I would guess it's about 2,000 capacity, maybe 3,000. I'm not quite sure. But the whole tour was about between 2,000 and 5,000 people in each night. So it was pretty big to me, definitely.
Yeah. And did you change your live rig to suit Merciful Fate? Was there any sort of specs or guidelines they wanted you to adhere to?
Well, they don't use backline, like they don't use amps on stage. So that was like a big change for me. And yeah, there are most of the band are on in-ears. Two of them are still using the monitors, but yeah, it's all kind of like digital amps and stuff, which is fine. Like, I could still use what I was using over here with my bands. I was using the Dark Glass Photon pedal at the time anyway, but I was always running it through an amp. And I always feel, when you play the smaller shows, I feel more reassured to have the amp there. Like, you can always hear it. It's always just behind you, like physically there, blasting out your bass. And when you then have to rely on just monitors or just in-ears, it made me a little bit nervous. But to be fair, like, it sounded great, and kind of adapted to the in-ears thing quite well. I think it felt more natural because I'd spent so much time practicing the songs at home, not rehearsing it in a studio with the band loud and everything. Having that kind of controlled volume, and my bass was, you know, cutting over the top of it, that felt more natural than what I would if I did that with my band that I normally rehearse, like, in the room with them, if you know what I mean. They were quite open to whatever my sounds were going to be like. And then just kind of was like, oh, well, in the first rehearsal we had, it was like the day before the first show. They were just like, okay, so what does it sound like? Okay, yeah, that sounds cool. Yeah, we'll use that. And just, yeah, cracked on with it.
Great. So it wasn't like you had to use a rig that they had used on the albums or they had used live prior, and you could, and then I guess you're more free to walk around and go to the different sides, and you're not like away from your cab or your monitors, yeah, being like, oh, am I, you know, especially stepping into big shoes like that, right? You know, you would have been, I guess, more sort of planted and not had that freedom.
True. Yeah. So that did mean that wherever I went, I could still hear myself really well, still had pretty much the exact same mix. So I can see why it's definitely a benefit.
Yeah. Now, did you want to play other songs? Like, were there any, I was surprised because I even like Dead Again, like I booked them on that tour in 98, they played Connecticut, and you know, looking through the discography and then looking at the set list, if that show you're talking about is the one at Deep Ellum, yes. Live.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. October of 2022. I mean, the set is great. There's not much I would change, but like, what if you could, like, if you went to King and you're like, hey, listen, you know, I really love this song. What one would you choose? And do you think you could convince them?
I don't know. I guess it might be, I mean, my two favorites were already in the set. So Melissa was already in the set, and Doomed by the Living Dead. And so I don't know, I guess I was hoping for Into the Coven to be there. And yeah, I don't know what else, I guess. I don't know. I was just kind of really just chuffed that it was the first two albums, because I'd listened to them the most, I guess. And I don't know, another one of my favorites is That You, Melissa. I maybe because it, like, it kind of follows on from the Melissa one, and like that one's really cool, but it's not as, I don't know if it would work as well live as those, like the kind of old school ones would.
Yeah, it's tough, right? Because then the fans will also be like, well, we just want to hear the hits, we just want to hear the classics. But I do like a deep cut occasionally.
Yeah,
I feel like a deep cut is a good one to throw in for the diehards who've seen the band before.
Quick interruption, letting you know today's episode is brought to you by IndieMerchStore.com. And right now you can pre-order the new, well, by the time you're hearing this, it's going to be out. It's the new Aborted album, Vault of Horrors. It's out now. And you got to go check it out because it is a banger, son. IndieMerchStore.com. Use the promo code JOSTA10. You'll see there's limited vinyl plus a ton of killer merch, including a Hellraiser puzzle cube. I'm all about that action. I might have to go drop some loot on IndieMerchStore.com right now. So go check out this new Aborted album, Vault of Horrors. Make sure you use that code, so they know who's driving the fucking sales over there at IndieMerchStore.com. Use the code JOSTA10 for 10% off. And come to Milwaukee Metal Fest May 16th through the 19th and stop by the IndieMerchStore.com
booth at Milwaukee Metal Fest. They'll have one of the biggest, best booths there because they're one of our official sponsors of the fest. Speaking of the fest, May 16th, if you're watching on YouTube, you'll see a little graphic on the screen right now. You'll see the pre-party. We got Bobby Hamble. We got Bobby Blitz. We got Zetro and some more surprise guests that will be announced. The meet and greets are on sale at martyrstore.net, and you can get your tickets to the whole weekend. Keep in mind, you get into the pre-party for free when you buy the weekend pass. Go to therave.com/metalfest and get your tickets before they are gone. Now back to the show.
But what is the plan? Do you have tours coming up? Are we going to hear something soon?
So the plan is that we have South America, like just two shows, Chile and Brazil. Summer Breeze Brazil is the next show. And then there isn't that much going on. I think there may be like perhaps the odd show in the next like year or so, but it's going to be mostly focused on a new album. I've heard the demos and they're sounding fantastic. So it's going to take a while because we've got the King Diamond album's going to come next. So King's focusing on that. Then he has to release that, then do a tour following that. And then it'll be the Merciful Fate stuff. So there's definitely a chance for a single this year at some point, but not quite sure. I'm not quite sure when, like in terms of like the order of things, but definitely there's two shows this year. And then hopefully we'll be touring a new album in maybe towards the end of 2025 or going into 2026.
Now, knowing that, did you want to put out something on your own with another group or solo or do your own, focus on your content? Like, or are you just kind of staying in Merciful Fate zone between now and then?
Well, like I know I need to kind of, work on the sets before South America. I need to catch up on these demos because, they've been kind of working on these for a while and I need to kind of get used to them, get a feel for them. But, this year I'm not really needed. They don't need much of my time. So I'm working with my other band, Fury, that we've been going for, I've been with them since like 2017, 2018. We're going to try and get our album out this year. So yeah, so I've still got stuff to work on. And as you said, like the social media stuff, I have a Patreon as well myself. And I know that the King Diamond as a band is a big part of King's life. So that doesn't mean that that means that I can like keep working, doing other things on any downtime that Merciful Fate have. But it doesn't mean that Merciful Fate is kind of like out of my mind or anything. It's kind of just going to keep chipping away at those new demos until they're ready.
That's great. And so these shows that you have coming up with Fury, these are in March and April. If people want to go to your website, furyofficial.co.uk. And then you're also doing a festival. Okay. SOS festival in Manchester. Well, that's nice that they didn't make you sign an exclusivity agreement. So you can do these other pub and club shows, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I guess, the reasons why, Joey had to go was because he was so busy with Armored Saint. And I think that they've put the trust in me that I can do other bands. And there's never been any rules of against like doing no other bands because, everyone's got other stuff going on in their lives. But when push comes to shove, when there's an album like that needs recording or there's a tour that needs your commitment, then that's there. And I guess that's something that, unfortunately Joey couldn't do because he was such a big part of Armored Saint. Like it's kind of his band. Whereas with Fury, I'm not saying I'm just the bass player, but like they can definitely, operate without me, which they did on a couple of shows on when I did the other tour with Merciful Fate. And, they can continue to do it. And as I said, like there's not very much going on in the next 2 years. So I can definitely do a few Fury shows here and there before we release an album. And then we can book a lot more dates after that.
And what is the plan with Fury? Like, will you shoot a video for these albums or two? Does that even still matter? I see that debate out there. I still think it does. I'm hoping that the YouTube algorithm comes back in favor of music videos, because I really felt it helped a lot of bands. Now it seems like you have to have a real wild video to get it to hit the algorithm, or you got to have something really unique, really different looking. But I guess, yeah, when will we hear the first single and see the video, if there is going to be one? And do you have to make it extremely crazy to cut through the noise?
Yeah, I think I know what you mean. You know, there's a much less focus on music videos, like music TV. And I still watch music videos. I like the immersive experience of, a band's dropped a new single and they have a video for it. Perfect. Like, let's watch it and really check it out. But I guess even if you don't have a music video, or there's still like a visual element that's needed. So if you don't do a music video, you're going to have to do something else. I don't know. I see so many people now, they just do kind of the kind of TikTok. It's like a music video, but it's more casual. It's like kind of syncing it with like DIY videos and like lip syncing and stuff. That kind of thing, which I can definitely see why it's entertaining, and it's cool that it's so DIY and you don't need a big budget for it. And that's fantastic. But unless if you have those ideas, it's I just don't really know. I don't think it works as well with a band, you know. It works great for artists where it's like a singer and it's their project and they focus on, you know, doing all of the parts themselves. But yeah, when it's like a band situation and all members are kind of equal parts of the project, then it makes more sense to do a music video. So we're definitely going to be doing a music video for an upcoming single, which is actually just a re-recording of an older one, but we're doing that as a little like in between thing before we get the album stuff done. But I mean I would hope that maybe in the summer, at least the autumn, we'd have the first couple of Fury singles from the next album with music videos. Definitely, we like music videos. We're really into them, and we quite like making them a bit more, you know, not just a performance video in like in a shed or whatever. You know, we like to kind of make it make sense for the song concept.
Yeah. I'm shooting one tomorrow for a guest spot that I sang on, and I'm like, I'm so busy with all this other stuff. I'm like, just choose the location. Tell me where to be and the time. As long as I don't have to wear something wild. Like, I don't want to wear like some sort of costume or animal head or, you know,
yeah.
But at the same rate, I'm like, I don't also want to just be the guy in the warehouse doing nothing. Yeah. Like I want it to have a level of production. I like a narrative. If there's a narrative and I got to act, as long as it's not cheesy acting or stuff that's not in my wheelhouse. Like if they need me to do lines before the song, like, no, we're not doing that. But I've written video treatments before where I'll have all these different scenes and I'll storyboard it out, and then they all get cut, or they can't be shot, or it can't be shot how I want it. So I see the challenge there, but I also think it's gotta be the right song, and it's gotta be it's like you have to have lightning in a bottle almost, where the location becomes available. The extras are available. You have to have a great team. It's not as easy as it once was. I feel like now you're up against so many challenges, and then you do run the risk of, you know, only 10, 20,000 people see it on YouTube. And then you put all this time and energy into it. But I look forward to see what you come up with. And I love a re-record. I'm not anti-re-record. I think that's great for the time being in the, you know, as you prepare the full album. Plus the band is still fairly small, right? It's not like your existing fans are going to be freaked out about a re-record.
Yeah, I think it's a re-recording of a song that was on the very first album, and that didn't have very... It didn't have the best kind of recording process, and I think we can definitely make it sound a lot better and cleaner now. We've got, because we now kind of got two front persons, we've got two vocalists, and so we can swap more between them. So we like doing that. And so, you know, there's definitely changes. Like, I don't think it's ever going to, for some people, it won't replace the original recordings, but it's a kind of a new take on it. And, you know, it doesn't get in the way of recording the album, because we already know the song very well. We kind of just laid it down in the studio really quickly and used it as a way to test out new studios, because we were looking at changing how we record. So we were like, well, let's do something we know really well, not part of the album. So, and if it comes out well, then we know we have a new place to record the next album. So that was it. There was a few things that kind of, it ticked a few boxes, and so we just, and actually like a couple of songs we've re-recorded from that album, because they deserve something better, like a bit more life, if you know what I mean.
Right on. What do you know what the song is about? Like, can I pitch you the narrative for the video of what it might be? Like, do you know the lyrical content?
Oh, okay. Well, so we haven't really announced this yet, but I'm sure it's fine. I'm sure it's being announced very soon. The song is called "The Prince of Darkness," and it was originally about a friend who plays darts, and his kind of darts name. He was known as the Prince of Darkness. So when he would go up and do his shots at darts, he was called the Prince of Darkness. And so that was like his intro music or something, if you imagine it. But so, yeah, it's kind of about the devil, in a way.
All right. So if you had an unlimited budget, what would you do? Would you want some gore in there? Would you want some fire, some flames, some actors, some extras? Or do you go the funny route? Do you try to get like an Ozzy impersonator and follow him around?
That would be really cool, actually. Like, yeah, at the moment, the ideas are fire and like kind of satanic ritual themes. That's probably going to be the route we're going to go down, because it's possible within our budget. So you have to see how it actually pans out. We managed to pull it off, because that's the thing, as you said, about getting the extras and yet the availability from people who are up for painting themselves red. And although I don't know, we've been quite lucky. We've had a lot of people willing to like paint themselves red and be a devil for us in actually two videos now. This will be the third. We have a theme appearing.
Do you have a local farmer you could borrow a black goat from and get a little Black Phillip in there or something like that? Can you?
Wow. Yeah, that's a good idea, but I don't know. I don't have any like goat herd friends.
kids and animals are the hardest ones, right? Like, yeah, I had that idea at one point, and I remember pitching it. What year was it? It was early on. Actually, it might have even been for another band. And I remember just calling around, because I'm not, you know, I'm right north of New York. I guess in New York City, you probably have more options, but I'm like 80 miles north. And I remember people were like, no, I'm not renting you animals. And then I pitched the idea of like burning a pentagram in the ground and like shooting it. But this is before drones. Like, this is in the 90s, late 90s. And I was like, well, if we do it close to the house, we could shoot it from the roof. Like, we don't have to rent a crane. So I'm sure by now, but tons of people have already burned a pentagram in the ground and shot it with a drone for their video. But as far as having kids in the video, I think the best one was Pantera. It's either Revolution Is My Name, or I think it's the one, maybe Michael can look it up. I think it's the one off of Reinventing the Steel, where the little kids are dressed up like Vince and Dime and Phil and Rex. But that, it has, as far as I know, it hasn't been done in a while. So, I mean, if you did have little kids in the video as you guys, that could be hilarious, especially if they're doing a satanic ritual. But then, you know, the parents won't sign off on the on the acting release or whatever, right? Like they'll be like, wait, what are they doing? Oh, they're going to dance around this flaming pentagram just for the day. Here's 20.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like it's difficult enough.
Right.
You know, getting the shots that you want when you have the vision and you're kind of in charge of it. And yeah, but I don't know. I think it would definitely be a lot. I don't know. A lot of health and safety issues as well.
This new spot that I'm in right beneath me, the basement, there's this old foundation and then there was a new foundation. And in the old foundation, which no one knows when it was built, but they think it was built by this super high level mason back in, I don't know, the late 1800s. But it does kind of look a little dungeony. And I thought, oh, I should rent this out to bands.
Yeah.
To shoot videos in. And I made the mistake of saying that on the phone. Well, my girlfriend was there. She's like, no, I don't want any bands driving in and out, like, you know, like shooting dungeon scenes. I was like, oh, shit, I'm caught. I can't do it. But back. So back to Merciful Fate. I got totally off track. I'm sorry, because I love the music video talk. I still feel like one day I will make the quintessential Hatebreed music video. We haven't done it yet because of budget constraints, because of scheduling constraints. But back to Merciful Fate. Mark Horror Armenta in the chat here, he says, Egypt was a hit. Not sure why they don't play it anymore. I agree. Now, that's one you could campaign for.
Yeah, definitely. No, yeah. I think, I guess, like, with the return of Merciful Fate, like, having not toured in America for 25 years, they were like, well, I don't know, what do people want? Let's give a chance to all the young people coming through who have never had a chance to see any of these old songs, so let's bring those back first. And then I guess maybe once we've kind of done a bunch of these countries again, we could be adding some of the later stuff, like Egypt. That would be really cool.
Then you could have a sarcophagus come out on stage, a pyramid backdrop, will there be
the thing, there's more concept and, like, you know, stage design, and maybe like all this stuff works within King's vision of you know, the visuals with the music that's being played of those two albums. But maybe later stuff, he's going to be like, oh, no, because then we'll need this and this and this. And then the production team will go, oh, my God.
Right. Does he still smoke on the bus?
No.
Okay. That was, I always heard that, you know, like in the back lounge with the with the heat on in the back lounge. Does he allow the air conditioning on the bus, or does that mess with his voice?
Generally we didn't really have it on very much. And that's good for me because I hate being cold. So, and it wasn't insanely hot, when we were in America. So I guess maybe that's why, but yeah, they kept it always pretty warm in there.
All right. Did he try to get you into NASCAR? Was it during the NASCAR season?
Oh no, we didn't really. He didn't really speak about it.
Really? Okay, because I heard he likes NASCAR too. What was the other one? There was another. I forget. There was another thing I had heard throughout the years, like different. You know, you hear different King stories. You never know which is real, which is fake. But on the Hatebreed bus, we keep it Arctic. Like, people hate it. You could see your breath on there. It's like The Exorcist, the movie. It's like the movie.
Does that not affect everyone's voices, or?
I don't mind it, but our drummer hates it. He's right. Yeah, he's like, well, and also our guitar player Frank, he lives in Florida, so he just loves it warm all the time. But we live in, you know, New England, so like we're just used to the cold, and we like it cold. Like, even now I have the AC. It's January, it's dead of winter. I have the AC in my bedroom.
Wow. It's mad.
What was the other one? There was another one besides the smoking in the back lounge. Well, that's great that he doesn't smoke in the back lounge, but I heard it was just heat, NASCAR on the TV, chain smoking. What about, what was the shit? I lost it. And it was a good one too. It was something on there. Oh, I remember, because we did Milwaukee Metal Fest with them in 98, I think it was. What about the Road Case for the wine. Does the wine still get its own road case?
I don't know, actually. I didn't see a separate case for wine.
That could have been one of the other guys at the time.
Okay. Yeah, maybe. What kind of wine was it?
It was expensive, and we were told to stay away from it. And I think we might have even gotten in trouble for, I'll have to ask Jack Koshick, the old promoter, but I think we got in trouble for taking a bottle out of it. Because we were kids, and we were, you know, snooping around backstage, and we were like, we didn't even have a trailer for our gear. We were sleeping on top of the gear in a van. So we thought that was amazing that a band had enough money to travel with their own climate controlled road case for the wine, like your own traveling wine cellar. We're like, that's when you know you've made it. Merciful Fate, they if anybody deserves to have their own traveling wine cellar, it's King and the boys. So
I don't think they have as much priority on alcohol and cigarettes as they used to.
Hey, everybody, jumping in for a quick interruption, letting you know today's episode is brought to you by CenturyMedia.store. That is the place to go to support all of the killer Century Media bands that are going to be playing this year's Milwaukee Metal Fest. I want to thank Century Media for not only bringing us today's episode with Becky Baldwin, but also being one of the official sponsors, one of the official supporters of Milwaukee Metal Fest. This is our second year back, and we're just thrilled to have their acts on the show. Make sure you see Skeletal Remains on tour now, supporting their new album, Fragments of the Ageless, which I got to say, I played that on the music show on the Patreon, and people were loving them. I've taken them out on tour before, and the band just absolutely shreds. If you're into that brutal death metal, they are one of the best and brightest of this next generation. Also, Night Demon is going to be playing their first Milwaukee Metal Fest appearance. And we're so psyched to have a power metal and classic heavy metal sound on the Friday night. And a lot of people are really looking forward to seeing Night Demon. They're one of those must-see bands on the Friday, May 17th date. But we got Bewitcher, we got Stabbing, we got Lacuna Coil, Upon Stone, and a bunch of other great bands. Make sure you go check out their releases today after the podcast at centurymedia.store. Now back to the show.
Yeah, what's it like? Is any metal getting played on the bus? Like, what do they listen to?
It was actually kind of, it was quiet for the first couple of weeks. And then I was kind of like, I really want to put some music on. Like, can I hook up my Bluetooth? And they're like, oh, I don't know how it works. And I was like, okay, I can work this. Come on. Like, I'm a millennial, I can figure this out. but then I was just kind of in charge of it, and they were just kind of like, why do you listen to all this stuff? Like, you're like, this is the stuff that we listen to. And I'm like, well, yeah, it's because that's why I'm here, because I like your band and you play stuff like this. So this is the stuff that I listen to anyway. So yeah, okay, most of the the music was kind of like Judas Priest and UFO and stuff like this, but yeah, that's kind of why I'm here.
Right on.
So it was cool. Like, and what, you know, what was really nice was just starting to hear the stories like that you tell as well, of these bands, like times that they've met the bands that they've always looked up to, and all this stuff was just really cool. And, you know, bands that they'd been in previously, like Mike Weed, he'd been in, so he'd worked with Messiah from Candlemass on what they called Memento Mori. And I'd never really listened to them very much, but he was like, oh yeah, check them out, I think you'd like them. And I was like, yeah, okay. A few months later, I'm like, I love your band.
That's awesome. I'd be asking King about the Brats, right? That he had a punk metal band before Fate. I'd love to hear that if there's any recordings out there. And Hank, I have his other records too. He did a couple records, but yeah, you should ask Hank if you get the chance. Say, hey, what's this about a road case? You guys used to have your own wine road case that you're trying. No, I don't know. Maybe don't ask. He'd be like, what are you talking about? But I could have swore there was one at one point. What was the other one? There was one other one, but yeah.
I will definitely ask. At some point, I'll remember and it'll come up and I'll be like, Yeah. So did you have a separate road case for just wine?
Yeah. And asking and about
who was it that was into the wine? Like I don't really, you know, Bjarne, the drummer, he tends to be on the wine most of the time, but everyone else it's only really him, to be honest, the big wine drinker.
Now, when you did the tour, what was the most surprising guest or what was the coolest guest that came to the show that you met backstage? I'm sure there was a bunch of them, but.
It was definitely in LA, Dave Grohl came and I was just not expecting to see like probably the most famous man in rock music to be at a Merciful Fate show. Like I didn't really know he was a big fan. I don't know. I just not someone that I ever expected to meet. And then I heard that we were kind of backstage and about to go into the green room. And they were like, oh, you can't go into the green room. And I'm like, why not? It's our green room. And he's like, oh, well, Dave Grohl's in there. And I'm like, what? Who? Like, what? but like, that's also my green room. So I want to go. but, you know, it was all cool. And I was just kind of like, just really excited because I mean, I've never been a huge Foo Fighters fan, to be honest. And I personally didn't really believe all the hype. I sound really bad now. Like, you know, everyone talks about him being like the nicest man in music. And I'm like, nobody's that nice. Like, seriously, I don't believe it. It's just a facade and nobody gets that big in any industry without stepping on a few people and pretending that they're all like, you know, everything's fine. But then I did meet him and I was like, oh no, he is really nice. He's really sweet. So I guess I was completely wrong.
Yeah, he totally is. And a lot of times he's like rolling solo or rolling like with very few entourage. I met him backstage at Download, just like, wait, no security, nothing. Just kind of like just making his way to the bus alone. And you're like, wait, what is going on here? I mean, that was 2005, but still it was, you know, I had heard that even leading up to that point, like, oh, he's just the best dude. Doesn't take himself too seriously.
Yeah. Yeah. I came across this video from that show of him just like rocking out, watching Merciful Fate and like screaming along. And he just looked like, you know, any other person in the audience that night, just watching a band and letting loose. And that was so cool. And I think I was kind of aware of where he was in the audience. So like watching when the two support bands were on. And so I was kind of walking past just being like, oh, I know that Dave Grohl's just in there and nobody here knows, but he's just kind of managed to like blend in enough to kind of get into this little area and nobody's really spotted him, which is really, really cool.
That's great. I liked what you said about the side band. Right. And I made a note here to tell just because I want to go listen to that. You said it's members of Candlemass and who else?
It was the singer of Candlemass, Mike Weed, who is in King Diamond and Merciful Fate. Also Snowy Shaw was on drums and he's
in the
Diamond. Yeah, yeah.
Have you met him?
Not in person yet, but I've spoken to him online. And yeah, he's really cool. So it's all very exciting. Yeah. Like it's just opening my mind to all these like great bands now.
there are so many bands in that Merciful Fate universe, in that orbit, and so many great side bands. Like I remember when Charlie played bass in Merciful Fate, right? For a little bit. Yeah. And then I remember hearing his other bands and I just the other day was listening to that Night Flight Orchestra. Have you heard that?
Oh yeah.
So good. Right.
Cause
he was in that too.
Yeah.
So there's just so many talented people in that Merciful Fate orbit that at one time, you know, jammed with them or someone who jammed with them. So yeah, we should talk about all those different projects. Cause then, you know, people will go listen to them and discover them like we have. I mean, Witchery, I think Charlie was in too, who were great. Maybe Spiritual Beggars. There's so many bands to keep up with. It's like every day I'm remembering another favorite band or another favorite project. But yeah, what would be another one you would would recommend. I should look up Snowy Shaw's projects.
Yeah, he's still doing stuff. And another one from Mike Weed was Abstract Algebra, which they only did like one album, I think. And it like it just totally didn't hit the industry at the right time. You know, people weren't wanting that kind of metal in the kind of 90s. And but yeah, they kind of re-released it like recently, the album that he did with them. And it was just really interesting project. And it's exactly the right kind of style of metal that I really love. But yeah, when I you know, was about to go on the Merciful Fate tour, I felt like there was so much background, so much history, so many like names to learn, and then I just had to like just keep going on Wikipedia, like doing a deep dive and be like, oh, so this is this person, they were in that band, this band, that band. I'm trying to like remember it all so I don't sound like really stupid when I go on tour with them and I don't know anything about their lives, which I should do, like. Because I was, you know, I was a fan, but I wasn't like, you know, I didn't own every album. I didn't know the whole lore until, you know, more recently. And so now, you know, fans of the band that I'm in, Merciful Fate, tell me things about the band that I just have no idea about. And I'm like, that's really interesting. yeah, thanks for updating me on that, because there's still so much to learn and yeah, like to check out in terms of like bands associated with these musicians.
Yeah, we could do a whole deep dive music show on just the various projects, right? Because you got Dream Evil and Therion, and I mean, yeah, Snowy alone, but also with Hank and Mike.
Like Mickey D was in King Diamond for a while, and like, you know, Scorpions, Motorhead, like it was because I guess also King Diamond, I didn't know all of their eras, and I was just watching a video and I'm like, oh, that's Mickey D, and like, yeah. Okay, I didn't really know that until later on, so it's really cool history.
I mean, Mike, when we were kids, we had his other band. We had a CD of his other band. I think it was Edge of Sanity. They were like way before their time. He'd be great. I have to get him and Snowy on the podcast. That's a whole show unto itself. But yeah, I need to check out Abstract Algebra. I remember hearing about that. But he also jammed in the Haunted too, right? At one point, or worked with them. Yeah, those Swedes, man, the Swedes, they are metal maestros. I mean, they really are. It's impressive. Even the most obscure Swedish side projects are commercially competitive.
Yeah. With
so much of the stuff that's out there.
Yeah. And I think it seems like they all kind of know each other. And I guess Sweden isn't a very big or particularly like densely populated places, except for like, you know, a couple of cities, I suppose, especially for musicians. So they're all kind of in similar places. But every time I meet a Swedish musician, they're all like, oh, yeah, I know Mike. And so they all just like know Mike. And Mike's like, oh, yeah, he's Swedish and he plays metal, so I know him. Well, okay, that's cool. And, you know, probably even like Norwegian and the Danish as well. Like I don't know, maybe I'm assuming too much that they're closer together than I think. It's like probably people assuming that I knew the Queen or something, but they do seem to know each other.
and some of it's so good where I wonder, like, did they make some sort of Faustian pact? Like, is there a deal we don't know about? And I know King has, you know, talked about that philosophy or talked about at least Levian Satanism, but are you ever down for that? Or are you scared of that? Do you ever think, like, did I make some sort of deal now to get this opportunity? Am I in the pact?
it doesn't really worry me. I think I, you know, I was like kind of interested in it when, you know, when you just don't know the people at all. Like I didn't know the band at all when I was about to just go on a 5-week long trip with them. I was a bit like, okay, maybe I should find out more about what they're about, you know, other than the music side of things. So, but like I watched loads of interviews, I've been talking about it, and it's, you know, it's completely aligned with kind of what I believe about religion and and kind of morality and ethics and stuff. Like a lot of it is, yeah, like very, seems very reasonable to me. So, so none of that really frightened me. I think that I guess there've been times when, as you say, you just think like, how is this crazy stuff happening? How is this all possible? And I think like, is there some kind of weird satanic conspiracy that's like making all these great things happen? because of course, like the government, you know, they must be in on this satanic stuff because, you know, it's all part of it. And I don't know, you just kind of, when you're sleep deprived, like I was perhaps at the start of the tour, you have like crazy ideas. And I was just thinking like, oh God, is this all like kind of eyes wide shut kind of stuff? But it's, but at the moment, no, like none of it scares me. None of that kind of stuff worries me at all.
Right. So you're not like getting to the LA day and they're like, oh, Dave Grohl's here, but also we're going to like meet with the head of the church of whatever secrets or the head of some secret society or something like that. No, I think he's talked about it where, you know, he talks about the devil, but not in the sense of it being like in reference to it in the Abrahamic religions, right? Like more of a life philosophy of freedom, and you don't need to believe in a God or a devil to just be a decent person and sort of follow your life's path. And I'm paraphrasing, I could be totally off.
I think you've got the kind of general idea there. And like I do think it's kind of ironic that it then became, you know, the kind of rejection of organized religion turned into almost like an organized religion, like the Satanic Church and the Church of Satanism. So, but I don't know, like, I think that is a bit of a contradiction. But still, like, what's behind it, like what they aim to do in it is like not really concerning. And I think, you know, the press did like to whip up some kind of controversy about Satanists and stuff like this, and therefore like bands and musicians who play that kind of thing or, you know, subscribe to those kind of thoughts. But it's all very, I don't know, like, if you listen to anything like the King says, he sort of talks a lot about how religion has like a terrible history of just atrocities, like in many places of the world, all different kinds of religions. And if we could hold them to more scrutiny, you know, more so than as much that we do to like the Satanic Church or whatever, then, you know, you may find more information that puts you off kind of organized religion.
Yeah, it's like an easy target to say like, oh, King Diamond's coming, let's go protest it or whatever, but not look into actual real stuff going on in the world that is being committed in the name of other things. Yeah. Did you ever talk to Mr. Sherman about his other band Fate? And do you know about that one?
Was that the one like just after Merciful Fate broke up in the kind of like late 80s?
Yeah, he's like, yours is Merciful Fate. Ours is Fate. Now we're just Fate. Like that's what I thought originally, but it's much different.
But like, wasn't it more
like rock,
commercial, rock. Like rock kind of? Yeah. I've not like listened to very much of it, to be honest, but I think I do need to check it out because he's a great guitarist. So, but you know, he also loves a big chorus. So, you know, but like both of those things I love as well. So I might have to check that out a bit more.
Right on. So what's the pre-show? Like, is there a huddle? Like, is there a mantra? Is there, do you all put in and you're like, all right, Satan on three or whatever, Melissa on three, or do you just walk out alone and you just get up there and they're like, roll the intro?
I think it kind of separates out a bit because like, you know, we'll be entering the stage. Ooh, why is my camera turned off? I don't know what that
is. I can still barely hear my voice. So hopefully Michael isn't having like an audio editing nightmare. Oh, there you are. Yep.
Right. Because, you know, we separate off to like different sides of the stage, there isn't that much of a ritual altogether, but there will be stage right, kind of a bit of a little thing, because we always stand behind the stairs that they have on the at the back of the stage, and we'll have a little like fist bump before we go on, and then we have to listen for the intro, and then when like the laughter starts at the start in the intro track of the Oath, that's when me and Mike have to run around the side of the stage to get on in time. So yeah, like, I don't think so. I think everyone's like in their own kind of space, and I like that, because, you know, the first couple of shows I was like, don't talk to me, like I'm so nervous, please leave me alone until after the show, please. So yeah, it's just kind of getting set up and getting your head in the game, really.
And what's the backstage rider like? I had to go by, and my friend Eric picked up King from the hotel. He was like my runner for the day when I booked the show. And then I did all the shopping for the backstage. I have the rider here somewhere. Like, I always saved all the band's riders, and occasionally I'll thumb through them and get a kick out of certain ones' requests. But is it anything new, different, any weird requests?
I don't think there's really anything unusual on there. Like, there was, by the end of the American tour, there was so much chocolate. Like, there was just like, it was, I think it was Lindt or like 70% dark chocolate, and I like that. That's good, because I'm vegan, and that doesn't contain any milk, so I was like really keen for that. But I think we're getting like 5 bars of it a day, and we would usually not touch them, but we'd take them onto the tour bus and just put, we had this drawer we'd open by the end of it. And it was completely full by the end. And I don't know.
Do you fly home with it or no? Take a couple for your bag?
I did take a few out at the end. But yeah, I couldn't really take that much.
If we're flying home from like the West Coast, I'll take like maybe like a pound of coffee or something off the bus. I usually feel bad that a bunch of it's getting wasted. But I mean, I guess in a sense, you're lucky that it's not like an Axl Rose situation where you have to have like a baby lamb roasted at 10 p.m. right before. And then you have all this like lamb on the bus or something that you don't need or don't want, especially being vegan. You probably wouldn't be stoked on Axl having a lamb on a spit backstage. But
yeah, to be honest, like there wasn't much food that traveled with us, to be honest. I think I was probably the only person who was hoarding food, because you never know, in some places in America, you never know where you're going to find the next opportunity to eat something that's like vegan and decent. So yeah, so I was like, okay, yeah, I'm going to be traveling around with this like this avocado until for emergency situations.
My daughter's vegan, and I break her chops a lot about some of the stuff, because I mean, some of it just seems so super processed and unhealthy. It almost seems like an antithesis to what the vegan diet should be. But she got these slices the other day, and I always sort of kind of roll my eyes at it. It's like bologna style or whatever, you know. It's a veggie version of, I guess, something that would be considerable to pepperoni, but it was actually really good. I had it on a sandwich with lettuce and pickles, like you would a deli sandwich, but it was made from chickpeas, and it wasn't soy. It wasn't super processed. It was made from like chickpeas and herbs and spices, but it was like sliced like a deli meat. And I gotta say, I should probably give the company a shout out on the podcast, but Becky, thank you so much for the time. And we look forward to seeing this Fury video. If anybody wants to be an extra in the video, just hit up Becky. If anybody wants to direct it, do you have a director? Like, can they pitch you if someone's in the UK and they want to direct it, or they want to?
I guess so. Like, yeah, we just have some camera people, which I guess we'll probably direct it like for the time being. But if there's someone else who wants to like help out in any way, then yeah, we're all ears.
Yeah. And go see you at these gigs coming up in March, furyofficial.co.uk. And go see Crowbar in March too. If you get a chance, go check them out. Say hello to Kirk. They will be out with a thrash band called Inhuman Nature, who kick ass too.
Oh, cool. So where are the shows again? Did you say Tunbridge Wells and
They're playing Newcastle. They're playing Huddersfield, Manchester. Wait, are they playing Birmingham? Yeah, they're playing the Asylum on March 3rd.
Okay, cool.
So we'll put you on the list. Go say hi to Rob and his lovely wife.
Excellent. Thank you. Yeah, I'll put that in my calendar now, 3rd of March.
And hopefully we'll see you with Faye sooner than later. And I can't wait to hear the album. And I'm very jealous that you got to hear the demos.
Yeah, well, I have to hit the demos at some point.
You don't know how lucky you are. Well, I'm sure you do, but.
Yeah, no, I know.
But also, is there really luck? You were prepared. You did the work. You put in the time and they had seen you. I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the thing. When you start putting things, putting your music out there on the internet, you're playing, then you don't know who's going to see it. And like, that's quite exciting because, you know, it could be not very many people or it could be loads and you never know who's going to like notice it and think, actually, I have a plan for this person and I'd like to work with them. I'm really glad I started posting bass videos because I don't think I definitely wouldn't have the career that I do now if I wasn't doing that. And I don't know, some people say that, oh, well, you know, why have you got this like, B-list musician in, you just like grab someone from YouTube rather than a real musician. But I don't know, like, what else are you meant to do in your downtime between shows? And like, I still do tour. I've always played live as my main aim, but in terms of like adapting more to the online realm, which where most people consume music now, you've got to be online and you've got to put yourself out there online. You can't just only play shows and hope for the best. So
it's a great way of networking, even when you might not even know you were networking. And it's one part hustle and one part talent, where you know I've had that debate many times, like, does hustle beat talent and vice versa? So it's like you got the best of both worlds there by getting your name out there and getting your playing out there. It's an inspiring story and people should take from it, you know, what they need to take from it and learn, because you never know what's going to give you a leg up in this biz. Having done it for, you know, 30 plus years. I love stories like this because yours is one that a lot of people can say, yeah, I gotta get myself out there. I gotta make more videos. I gotta make content. But also you have to be cool and you gotta be the right. You gotta be able to mesh with people, and you gotta, when the moment does call, you gotta be prepared. So it's better I always say, stay ready so you don't gotta get ready.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think you're right. It's talent, and I think it's a lot of luck, of course. Like, I've definitely been lucky with how this all happened, but the hustling makes you more lucky, if you know what I mean. If you don't keep trying, you're not going to get as lucky as you would be if you were just kind of waiting for the opportunity to come to you. So the opportunity did come to me without me really seeking it out, but like, I gave it lots of opportunity to happen, I suppose. So it's kind of a mix of all these different things coming together to make me very happy.
Right on. Well, thanks so much, Becky. Have a great rest of your day. And yeah, if you see Snowy or Mike or Hank or the King, say, hopefully you had a good time on the podcast and I'd love to have him on.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Excellent. Awesome. Take care. Thanks so much. Thanks everybody from Patreon. Thanks, Mike.
Just a quick little outro after the outro or after the show. Thank you for all your support. If you liked what you heard and you want to donate, you can. It's $ Jamie Jost on Cash App. Any donation gets you a shout out, or if you want to shout out your band or your release or your tour or whatever, or your friend's birthday. Also at Jamie Jost on Venmo. And of course, paypal.me/Josta if you want to donate to the show. Any amount is appreciated. And we appreciate the subs over at patreon.com/Josta. And maybe if you got a couple extra bucks and you want to check out a bunch of the great shows on Gas Digital, go to gasdigital.com too.
and check it out there. Today's episode is brought to you by CenturyMedia.store. Century Media is helping us present. They're a main sponsor of the Milwaukee Metal Fest, which is coming up May 16th through the 19th, and you'll see their bands like Lacuna Coil, Upon Stone, Night Demon, and many more on the bill. Check out CenturyMedia.store. Also got to thank another one of our presenters and a sponsor of today's show, the mighty IndieMerchStore.com. You can go and you can see they have a ton of Chaos and Carnage tour merch up with Cattle Decapitation, Carnifex, Rivers of Nile, Humanity's Last Breath, The Zenith, and Vitriol, who Kyle from Vitriol is coming up on the podcast very soon. Check it all out over at IndieMerchStore.com and go see those guys on tour. You can see the tour dates at ChaosAndCarnage.com for tickets and VIPs, and you can grab merch once again at IndieMerchStore.com. Make sure you use that code JOSTA10 for 10% off. Last but certainly not least, I got to plug my own album, And Josta for All, coming out May 17th, all right? May 17th, which is a great day. A ton of great releases coming out that day. Gate Creeper, we got Chase from Gate Creeper coming up on the podcast in the next few weeks. But the album features Chuck Billy, Scott Ian, Steve Zetrosouza, Phil Demmel, and many others. You can pre-order now at martyrstore.net. And if you are coming to the Metal Fest and you want to get a meet and greet, martyrstore.net has your meet and greets as well. All these links will be in the show notes, plus whatever coupon codes you can apply to save a little extra loot. I really appreciate you listening to the podcast now that we're back in full steam. And who's coming up next, Mike? I think Kyle from Vitriol is the next episode, right? Or is it Steve Vai for episode 700? I forget.
For 96 is Kyle.
Kyle. And then we got Tim Lambesis, Steve Vai, Chase from Gay Creeper, John Five from Motley Crue. We got a ton of great episodes coming up. So thanks again for all the support. And yeah, we'll be back with Kyle from Vitriol. Drink your coffee, do your push-ups, listen to death metal. Bye-bye.
Executive producers Jake Olszewski, Ben Lee, AJ Lewis, Garrett Keeping, Dan Smith, Nick Torito, JJ Hernandez, Joe Bartovic, Jason Jarvis, Chris Larice, Alex Smolin, Todd McKee, John Blewett, Richard Miller, Kyle Marg, Nate Leffingwell, Morgan Costner, Mark Tagg, Zappagor Waikato, Niall Scollard, Kathy D'Ambrosio, Justin Steven, Jack Flanders, the Pit Commander, Andy Wilson, Jeffrey Kuhn, Kimo Humalamaki, Jonathan Metis, Brandon Cooper, Matthew Jankowskis, Jamie Kutcher, Ryan Underkoffler, Matt West, Ryan Maurice, Chad Green, Dallas Hendricks, Jacob Ahrensberg, Kenneth Moore, Kona Butterflies, Stephen Helm, Richard McIntosh, Jeff Stevenson, Ryan Williams, Larry Tooley, Dallas Bolin, Ryan St, Nathan Rex Madrid, Cameron Hendricks, Scandalous Official, Joe Motson, Let's Talk Resident Evil, Andrew Chase, Guy on the Couch, Chris Winchester, Antonio Reyes, Joe Otson, Dustin Stone, Lee Walker, Ryan Levson, John Henkes, Robert Bushaw, Troy Seal, Mark Horror Armenta, Jay Liberston, Nick Fowler, Mike Horgan, Emma Horgan, Arnarok, Patrick King, Oscar Brummett, Stacy Steineke, Fernando Somoza, Patrick O'Brien, Dominique Zimmer, Ryan Sanders, Lara Snyder, Daniel Berg, Milwaukee Metal Sausage, Adam Boss, Adam Mecklenburg.
Some would say the Milwaukee Metal Fest is the Super Bowl of metal. May 16th through 19th at the Rave Eagles Club, featuring Mr. Bungle, Blind Guardian, Slaughter to Prevail, Testament, Avatar, Hatebreed, In Flames, Camelot, Death to All, playing, screaming Bloody Gore and the Sound of Perseverance, Municipal Waste, Symphony X, Autopsy playing Seventh Survival, Catatonia, Deicide, Terrorizer playing World Downfall, Possessed, Hammerfall, I Am Morbid playing Altars of Madness, plus 60 more bands. Get your tickets now at therave.com/metalfest.